Thank you very much for joining me tonight. It's been a pleasure being here, sitting in for George the last couple of nights. I'll be back again with you in March, and we're lining up some great guests. Remember, I'm always open to your ideas, thoughts, and guest suggestions. You can always email me, Dave at darknessradio.com. That's Dave at darknessradio.com. Tonight we're talking about the ghosts of Gettysburg. If you have stories in your own experiences, we'd love to hear from you and get a chance to discuss them with our guest. And I know we've got some emails popping in too. You can email me, Dave at darknessradio.com. We'll do our best to try to get to that during the show. Real quickly, I've got a question here, or a letter, Richard. It says, "Dear Dave, my name is Andrew. I live in South Carolina, work third shift, and I love to listen to Coast on my breaks at work. I have a great story for tonight's show and some questions, but I'm not sure I'll be able to call in, so here it is. Have the ghost orbs been photographed at Gettysburg before? Are ghost orbs the same thing as ghost apparitions? They just manifest a different way visually. And if not, what's the difference between ghost orbs and apparitions?" Why don't we just kind of tackle those real quickly here. Ghost orbs, and this is a very dodgy point, right? I mean, most of us take a look at pictures and see orbs in photographs that had to use a flash to be seen, are most likely, especially in an outdoor environment, moisture or dust or bug particulates, things like that. But then in Gettysburg, there are these visual balls of light that are seen with the naked eye. There's the difference between photographic orbs and the visual orbs that are seen. Have you seen those yourself?
So what, you're right, Dave, it can be a very contentious subject because, and quite an emotional one for some people. I think of orbs, that's a loaded term, as primarily something that has a natural explanation. On the other hand, if it's something like you're describing, I call it light phenomena or light anomalies. And those are generally things that are seen with the naked eye. And I've experienced flashes that might fit that description, but never the classic trailing lights that move in front of the eye. And as you pointed out, Dave, the majority of so-called orbs are perfectly natural when explained away as, you know, fog on the lens and those sorts of things, or fog in front of the lens. You tend to see true orbs with a camera flash. It's a function of the way the flash bounces back into the lens of the camera. But Gettysburg and many other haunted locations have different types of light anomalies that are not easily explained away.
I told you that I had a few experiences. One was on a battlefield, and I wish I could remember. What's that bridge? You know, there, in Gettysburg area, there's that.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, and I did investigate, well, we did visit, we didn't investigate, because it was midnight and freezing and full of people. Right. But you're talking about Saks-covered bridge, correct?
Yes, that's it. And so we had gone out there one of the nights with a very small grouping of people and a sensitive. And we were just out there just kind of enjoying it. It was nice. It wasn't too cold. It was just about right. And we were just standing on the bridge kind of chatting. And the sensitive we were with said, "There's something approaching. I can sense something." And, you know, I'm still skeptical of a lot of people that claim that they can sense something energetically approaching. And we turned toward the battlefield area and began seeing what looked like flash cubes going off. Oh. And at first I thought, are those, you know, I grew up in Illinois. We had lightning bugs, right? And I'm like, that is not a lightning bug. Those are literally like pops of light I'm watching. And we stood there astounded. And you're not supposed to be out in that area. I approached the battlefield in the dark at night anyway. I wanted to go see what we were seeing out there, and was somebody playing a joke on us? It wasn't something being projected. It was as though they were popping in midair. And we weren't hearing a thing. And we recorded. All of us whipped out our phones and started recording immediately. So we weren't getting any gun fodder at all. But, man, the visual was crazy, Richard. You could literally see what appeared to be flashes from gun points.
That's incredible. And if it's the same bridge I'm thinking of, it's Saks-covered bridge, right, Dave, with the big, what's roofed and everything?
Right, exactly.
So that was used by both armies during the Gettysburg campaign. It was used by the Union Army, I believe the First Corps, as they pushed into Gettysburg. And it was used by the Confederates afterwards during the retreat. And they would have brought quite a few of their wounded with them in their ambulance wagon. So there is a legend attached to the bridge, which doesn't seem to have any basis in truth, or at least it isn't verifiable, that three Confederates were supposedly hanged from the bridge and now haunt it. And I couldn't find any verifiable evidence of that. But when we visited at night, it was extremely cold because, you know, November, and it seems to attract sightseers that are into the paranormal. So we weren't able to conduct a true investigation, just experience the atmosphere.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before or since. I've seen some strange light anomalies, but that was something unto itself. And I can't even call it gunfire. I can't really tell you that's what it was. But knowing what we were looking at in that area, it's the first place your mind goes.
Do you think, Dave, that because there's this correlation in the paranormal literature between running water and paranormal phenomena, do you think that played a role in what you saw?
Great question. I don't know. I really wish I had an answer for you on that. I'm not sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got the story to share, and we'll start taking your phone calls and work through this and hear some of the other encounters that our guest was able to document in the new book. Stay tuned. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back, and Richard, here's an email that I'll follow up with. I mentioned that the gentleman was listening in, Andrew from South Carolina. He says, my story, in the summer of 2010, while I was still in college, I went on a trip with some friends to Gettysburg. We were able to take a day and tour the museum and battlefield. We rode around the whole battlefield, stopping to see monuments. The last stop on the road that goes around the battlefield is Little Round Top. Civil War buffs will know the significance of this little hill because it is where one of the most brutal parts of the battle took place. It was on this hill that General Lee tried to break through the Union lines three times, if I'm not mistaken. This was the major turning point in the battle and perhaps would have been the bloodiest place on the battlefield. My friends and I arrived at Little Round Top around 6 p.m., and being the adventurous 20-somethings we were, we decided to go look at the monument that is in the middle of the field about 100 yards from the actual viewing area. We hiked through some thick weeds and brush to get there, but it was worth it because we sat and watched the sun go down in the middle of the field. Just as it was starting to get dark, we start heading back up the hill towards my car. My friend Jonathan takes a few pictures with his digital camera and is surprised to see these small white balls scattered throughout the picture. The balls were ranged from the size of golf balls to baseball size. We thought it was probably water droplets at first, so I walked further up so that in the next pictures I was in frame. In the next few pictures, we were blown away because these little white balls surrounded me, and they were now hundreds of these orbs in the picture. It was the craziest thing. In one picture, we actually had a large orange orb that looked like the inside of an orange when it's cut in half, about the softball size in the picture, which was much larger than the white orbs had been. We kept taking pictures, and suddenly my friend's camera stopped working. It totally shut down and shut off. But when we got back to the car, it cut on and worked just fine. That made it extra creepy. We knew something strange had happened, but didn't know how to explain the pictures of what looked like balls of energy light. This past year, I heard a show on Coast to Coast about ghost orbs and did some research. When I saw these pictures on Google, I knew that what we had seen were ghost orbs. And that is a pretty big phenomena around Gettysburg as well, those light anomalies. But as you and I mentioned, some of it can be subjective, and it'll appear like balls of light that are much larger, but that's just because in relation to the camera lens, when the flash goes off, it's capturing reflections off of either bugs, dust, or moisture that may be closer to the camera. But the ones I've seen, when you've seen the naked eye and you can capture them on film, that's where it's impressive. Not using a flash, but just capturing it from its own internal light source.
Well, and the other thing that your listener adds that interests me, Dave, is the equipment failure. As we all know, that's fairly common at haunted locations, along with battery drains. And that's something we experienced in the wheat field at Gettysburg. Freshly charged batteries would just disappear in the blink of an eye and be completely dead. So the camera malfunctioning that this listener reports does interest me, because you have that and the light anomalies as well. Might be two pieces of supporting evidence.
What are some of your favorite stories that you experienced or were told about the battlefields and the paranormal activity that was taking place?
So the first thing I'd encourage people to do if they're into the subject is look at the books written by Mark Nesbitt, the Ghosts of Gettysburg series. Mark has spent a good 20 years collecting these stories from various visitors and from his own experiences. So speaking as someone who went in and did a project that I wanted to do and spent a week working on, this is the guy that really is kind of the keeper of the local folklore. So I encourage people to look at Mark's books. Now, when it comes to Gettysburg itself, one place I've never been able to get into, and hopefully that will change this year, is the orphanage. The orphanage then became the Soldiers Museum, but it was run by a lady called Rosa Carmichael and was established to look after the children that were left orphans after the battle. And unfortunately, this lady was extremely sadistic and brutal. She would beat the children. She would keep them chained up in the basement downstairs, half-starve them. And finally, when they caught up with her and found that she was all but torturing these poor souls, they ran her out of town. She disappeared in the middle of the night and basically got away with a fine. And I know, Dave, you were a researcher on Ghost Adventures, so you're probably very familiar with this location.
Yes.
People that spend time in that basement have the most disturbing experiences, usually with the spirits of children.
And that's the heart-rending part to me. When you're dealing with children's spirits, it unnerves me in so many different ways. You would just hope that they wouldn't be left behind like that.
And that was one of my, I think, optimistic points when I was taking EVPs on the battlefield, that I didn't get any intelligent EVPs. If I had, it's always cool to get an EVP, right? Especially one that responds to a question you ask. But I really don't like the implication that these men who suffered so much, no matter which side they were on, you know, this is not the time or the place to talk about the issues that precipitated the war and the battle, but they suffered horrendously. I don't like the idea that they might still be around and not be at rest. So this is one case where the lack of EVPs on the battlefield, or intelligent ones anyway, actually gives me great heart and makes me happy.
Yeah, that is a much better feel. Let's go wild card line to Keith in Rochester, New York. Welcome to the show.
Several comments and questions. First off, you mentioned the orphanage. Human nature never changes. Look at Paris, California, with those 13 siblings being chained by their parents.
Yeah.
So times may change, but humans act very viciously towards each other, even their own children. You mentioned the Federal 6th Cavalry. I believe that was commanded by the George Armstrong Custer.
That was the 7th, I believe, sir. The 6th was not.
During the Civil War, he had the 6th Cavalry. The 7th came later. And the acknowledged inventor of baseball, Abner Doubleday, was a general at Gettysburg. He was removed from command on the first day for allowing too many of his men to be killed in the first Confederate onslaught.
Todd, you're absolutely right. Doubleday was removed from command, and many people feel unfairly.
He allowed the elite brigade, the Iron Brigade, Western troops at that time. Michigan was a Western state. The Michigan 24th, the Iron Brigade, was destroyed under his command. I think he should have been court-martialed.
So you think so?
I disagree on that. I wanted to ask several questions. You mentioned Pickett's Charge. Why is it so hard to get an accurate estimate of the men who crossed that open field? I've heard 15,000, not less than 14.5K. You mentioned the lower number of 12,000. Why, even back then, certainly with the units at hand, Lee and Longstreet and Pickett, that I've never heard of a definitive number of those Confederates who crossed that open field. But do you have an idea on that?
You're absolutely right about that as well. Obviously, you're well educated on this subject. I've looked at many, many sources when writing this book, and none of them agree on the number of men that crossed the field during Pickett's Charge, and none of them agree on the number of casualties. They're all estimations. And the record keeping at the time was pretty good. So I do wonder if it's purely down to the fact that this was such a chaotic and confusing 3 days for both armies, that people had better things to do, or at least different other things to do, than keep records that accurately during the period.
About the burial squads. How back then, and even going back centuries before that, when we see today pictures of modern America in Europe, when they had less better ways of disposing pointedly of large numbers of dead, they didn't even believe in germs during the Civil War. How did they get rid, literally, of tens of thousands of dead in various conflicts going back even before the Civil War? And I'd like to ask pointedly, if the remains were not treated properly, in your estimation, do you think this is where ghosts come from, and so far as the dead not receiving their due propers in death, they come back to us, the living, and say, we were treated grievously, and we would like to say to you in the future, this has got to change. But I've always wondered how, for the audience, if they remember the movie Glory with Denzel Washington and Matthew Broderick, their characters were killed at the end of the film and just thrown into a mass grave. In your estimation, just certainly without the modern impetus and operations of getting rid of large numbers, pointedly, of corpses, how was that done? So that.
All right, and good questions. Thank you very much for giving a call. We're running up against the break, so I'll give you a quick chance to answer on that before we have to do that, Richard.
Sure, and you raised a great point there, sir. The truth is that there were many temporary war graves along the Emmitsburg Road and on various parts of the battlefield. Most were then reinterred at a later time, many of them in the soldiers' cemetery at Gettysburg, but not all of them. And there are horrific stories of usually the bodies of Confederates, because the victors kept the field and they took care of the Union dead first, of their bodies just being tossed between the rocks in Devil's Den. And for months and years afterwards, these corpses would reappear. They would be discovered. People walked around for months after the battle with rags tied over their nose and mouth because of the stench of death. Does that play into the haunting? I think it possibly could.
Right, and as we said before with Jeff Belanger's remarks, right, that ghosts are history's way of reminding us where we've been. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's certainly something to it. And what just tragic all the way around. Brutal, tragic, bloody carnage, frightening stuff. You know, hopefully we do start to learn more from that and start to avoid some of the conflicts that always seem to be right on the precipice of breaking free anywhere around the world at any given time. We'll get back to more calls. We've got more emails to read. I've got some questions and points that we'll be bringing up as the show progresses. Is the book out and available right now, Richard?
You can get the digital version right now, and the print version will be available from Friday.
Oh, fantastic. We'll have a link up to that, or you can continue to check darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link, and we'll try to have links up to all the books there, so it's much more accessible and easy for you to find. When we come back, we've got more of your calls, and if you have questions, you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Christian in San Pedro, California, you're up next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. Richard Estep, my guest. Let's go to Wild Card Line 1. Christian from San Pedro, California, thank you for getting up early with us. What did you want to share?
Hi, guys. I'm glad I can get on the show. Just want to have a couple of comments and share my experiences. I've been to Gettysburg 3 times in the 90s when my stepfather was in really good health. We made those adventures. I've been to a lot of the Civil War battlefields, you know, Shiloh, Vicksburg, Manassas, Antietam comes close to Gettysburg because that was a bloodbath, but nothing really compares to the emotionalism of Gettysburg. I like going to the area of Little Round Top and also the area of where Pickett's Charge was launched, which is kind of the very handsome Virginia Memorial where Willie is sitting atop a Stride Traveler looking directly out over to the Union lines, to the copse of trees. I urge anyone to go to Gettysburg. It's just, you won't be disappointed. It's very, very moving, like visiting the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. along the Mall. The men who fell there, I mean, 3 days, and it's like what you said, it's close to the total number, literally the total number of American casualties we suffered for the 9 years of the Vietnam War in 3 days, for God's sake. But I believe that my opinion is, I think that lead in the Army of Northern Virginia. I think that they lost. I think that Confederate defeat didn't occur along the Union Cemetery Ridge on July 3rd, 1863. I think that the South's defeat occurred 2 months earlier when Stonewall Jackson and his staff got lost in the dark woods around Chancellorsville and were mistakenly fired upon by their own men, I think men of the 18th North Carolina. I think that if Jackson had been, in fact, Lee actually said, many years after the war ended, when he was a superintendent of Washington University, which is now Washington Lee University, said to an aide, he said, if Jackson had been with me, we would have won at Gettysburg. And I just want to say that, yeah, it's very honorable men who fought, it was a good fight. They did the best they could. There was so much sacrifice and bravery on both sides. And, you know, to this day, it just makes you want to cry. The film Gettysburg really got me started in the Civil War. And also, you know, the novel, I urge anybody to read Michael Schara's novel, The Killer Angels. And I just want to hear your comments on what I said, okay?
Thank you, Christian. Have a great night. And did you want to weigh in on that, Richard?
I did. I did a couple of things, Dave. I couldn't agree with Christian more. The Killer Angels is the novel that seemed to bring Gettysburg back into public prominence. And you always see people wandering around the park with copies of that novel tucked under their arm. It's a terrific read, and I encourage everybody to read it. What Christian said about Stonewall Jackson is absolutely correct, and it's one of the great debates among Civil War scholars and enthusiasts. What would have happened if Jackson had survived Chancellorsville and had been at Gettysburg? Many people think that he might have dissuaded Lee from attacking where and when he did, either convincing him to engage the Union Army somewhere else or to attack in a different way, perhaps with a flanking move. James Longstreet, who was Lee's second in command, got a really hard time for quite a while, to the point where he only had a statue on the battlefield just a few years ago. Longstreet was kind of vilified. He tried to argue Lee out of making the frontal attack at Pickett's Charge and was unsuccessful. Lee, could Stonewall Jackson have dissuaded him or have done things differently? We'll never know, but it's one of the great questions that looms over the whole campaign and the whole Civil War.
Wild Card Line 3, Joe in the Bronx will be up next when we return to Coast AM. We're back, and so are your calls and emails. You can send me emails, dave@darknessradio.com. Wildcard Line 3, Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good, Joe. What did you want to share with us?
Yes, I wanted to ask your guest if there have been any sightings of President Lincoln in or near the Gettysburg battlefield, and any apparitions seen in the Soldiers' Cemetery on site?
Oh, Joe, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I'm not aware personally of any sightings of Lincoln's apparition in the area or in the cemetery. We do know that that's where the Gettysburg Address, of course, was delivered when he inaugurated the new cemetery, but I'm not aware of his ghost ever visiting. And in terms of other hauntings there, I'm not aware of any either, purely because they close and lock the cemetery at dusk. It's a beautiful place. I'm sure you've been. It's very reverential. It's lovely. And I would not want to go there after dark, purely because it would feel like disturbing the souls that should be at rest there.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Here's an interesting email. Dave, excellent show tonight. I'm loving the Gettysburg piece. I work overnight security at a Civil War site that I'll leave the name and location unnamed if you don't mind. There is a lot of controversy over whether the site is haunted or not. I strongly feel there is a presence here. Although I have never seen anything, there are certain areas of the site where you can just feel a presence of spirits, specifically a converted building which used to serve as the base hospital. I tend to get in and out quickly at these specific areas, so I do not disturb anything. I believe if there are soldier spirits here, they simply just want to be left alone. Great show tonight. Please share this with your guest if possible. I'd love to hear his take on the matter. And that comes from Mike.
Well, my hat goes off to Mike because he's safeguarding this piece of of American history. And I think that that's a wonderful thing for him to be doing. And I'm glad you're enjoying the show, Mike. As far as the soldiers wanting to be left alone, that may well be the case. And that may be another reason why they weren't particularly talkative during my visit to the battlefield. My hope is that there aren't too many Civil War soldier spirits around. Again, as I said earlier, I like to think that they're at rest or that they've moved on because they certainly earned it. But who knows?
There is, I mentioned earlier, another experience I had. There is, I thought it was a Fairfield Inn Hotel in Gettysburg as well. And they have a house on the property that they, I guess, originally had built to use for like the caretakers of the hotel. Mm-hmm. And that house has sat abandoned ever since they built it. There's many different stories. Tim, do you remember, was it the Fairfield Inn? Yeah, I think it was. It was, and I can't remember the name of it offhand. Might have been like the Grant Fairfield Inn or something like that. But there was the stories surrounding this house being very haunted and that employees didn't like to stay there. The workers didn't like to stay there. So they allowed us to do an investigation. And down the stairs into the basement, there was this crawl space cut into the wall. And we decided, of course, you know, being paranormal investigators, let's go to the absolute creepiest spot in the entire building, which has got to be a crawl space. And I crawled in there with Jeff Belanger and a couple of listeners, and we decided to try to do an EVP session. Now, we're in there with all of our lights off, so the only light is coming from that hole cut in the wall. And we watched somebody walk up and stand in front of the hole, and we said, well, we're about to do some EVP. If you want to, come on in and do the EVP with us. And they crawled in through the hole and skittered off to the side to sit down, and I said, all right, we're going to all, you know, start off by introducing ourselves. And I turned on the recorder and said, you know, thank you for having us here. My name is Dave. I'm Jeff. I'm Linda. I'm Marie. And then we waited for our new friend to speak up. I said, just please introduce yourself. Can you please introduce yourself so that we've all four said our names. Can you say your name? No response. I'm like, hello. And I turn on my flashlight and there's nobody sitting there. We, all four of us, watched this person crawl into the crawl space with us and go off to the side. Yeah. So that was one of those diaper changing moments when you do the paranormal investigating and have heard all of the experiences that are going on in this house. And then to have something that in your face, that was definitely one of the more intriguing aspects. And it was right there in the heart of Gettysburg.
And when we hear about folks that are very skeptical about this kind of field, You have one experience like yours, the one you just described, and that changes your whole worldview, doesn't it, Dave?
It does. And it's like playing Vegas. You know, the paranormal will start to get a little dry for me, and then all of a sudden you hit, and the slots pay off, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, this is why I'm so fascinated by this. Let's go east of the Rockies. We've got Andy in Redondo Beach, California. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know that between 46 and 51,000 people died in this war. My grandmother used to tell me a lot of stories about it. She visited the site often. And I got 16 brothers and sisters, and somewhere in our family trees, one of my family members down was there when that all this happened. But my question to your guy is, I've been having the same dream quite often, because my grandmother used to tell me stories about Gettysburg all the time. And I'd wake up in the dream, and she would be at the end of the bed throwing records at me. I wonder if she could tell me if there's any link between ghosts and dreams, and also if he heard about the guy in Virginia who had a dream that he seen the numbers in the lottery, and he played them the next day, and he won $400,000. I'll take my questions off the air, and thanks for having me. I've been listening to your show since 95, and thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Andy. Yeah, I've heard a lot of about people that have premonition dreams, and I'm waiting for that lottery number to come to me, so I'll keep open to that whole aspect of it. Was there anything you wanted to weigh in with, Richard?
No, there's a school of thought that says that the dead do return to us in dreams and communicate with us that way. I think we've all had those dreams, haven't we, where they feel so real,
right?
The tangible presence of someone we've lost. That I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
Let's go to west of the Rockies, Jason in Idaho. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave and Richard. How you doing?
Great.
Good, sir. How are you?
I have an experience with a full body apparition. I was 14 years old. I was in this house and walking to the kitchen. I look over to the sitting room, a lot of light pouring into through the main window. And I see what I thought was his dad, who's 6'5", big belly, looking at the china cabinet. So I stop and I said, "Hey, what are you looking at?" Didn't answer. And I was like, "Why are you wearing those?" He was wearing coveralls with work boots. And he was a salesman, so I couldn't figure that out. And then he turned to me, and I realized at that moment, he was translucent. I could see right through him all the way to the window.
Hmm.
Well, I was 14. I was so scared, I ran back to my buddy's room because I was staying the night at his house. And I was like, I just saw something. I don't know what it was, you know. And come the next day, I found out that it was his grandfather, because there was a picture of his grandfather wearing coveralls in that china cabinet. He was looking right at that picture. So I absolutely know that there are ghosts out there. And anyone that doesn't see them, they're not going to know. They're not going to want to know. But if you've seen them, if you've seen something, you believe. And that leads me to my question. As you're both the investigators, have you ever brought in a control group, like a control group of investigators that maybe give them under the guise that this is not a haunted place, but this is training for the next place that will be haunted?
Interesting point. Thank you very much for calling in. What do you think, Richard?
I think it's a great idea. It would be a double blind study, wouldn't it? I think what I would like to do is take them to two locations, one which is active, one which isn't, and see what results you get in each location, and not tell them, of course, which is which.
Yeah, that's a great point. Those double blinds are definitely more intriguing. And then if you do get action, then it makes you wonder, though, are you bringing something with you? You know, there's so many investigators I know that will go from place to place, and they always seem to get some kind of activity. And I'm not doubtful that they've got activity, but I'm doubtful that where that activity is originating from. Is it from the location or the person investigating the claims?
Yeah, the longer you do it, the more it seems to be attracted to you, the more it seems to follow you.
Interesting little point here. Cyril writes in and says, "I love tonight's show. Please, what are your guests' thoughts regarding the push to remove the Confederate monuments? I personally think it's misguided and wrong." That's what Cyril says. Do you think that's an important part of the history that should stay as just a reminder of, you know, the people that were involved, or are they better suited for places like museums?
It's a huge can of worms, isn't it? But speaking as a transplanted Englishman, I'll give you my opinion. I think that history is history, good and bad, and we do ourselves no favors when we try and cover up certain elements of it. It also makes me wonder, where do you draw the line? You know, are we going to tear down the Colosseum in Rome because of the aspects of slaves being made to fight there? I think, warts and all, our history is us. It's how we got here today, and I think it serves as a timely reminder to future generations of those that came before them, good and bad.
Mary writes in and says, "Great show, somewhat off topic, but Civil War related. Many of our family vacations were camping trips to Civil War sites in Virginia. One autumn, we camped at Holiday Lake near Appomattox. As we were falling asleep, Dad said, 'You know, kids, the deciding battle of the war was fought right here, a bloody battle. Many soldiers died. Some are probably still roaming around looking for lost arms and legs and their heads. Well, sweet dreams, kids.' None of us slept that night." And that comes from Mary. Thank you for sharing, Mary. Yeah, parents, they're good for that, aren't they?
Dad, how are they looking for their head?
let's go real quickly. First-time caller Randy in Florence, Louisiana. We're almost out of time, Randy. What did you want to share with us?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, you don't ever go to just regular cemeteries. I was in one, and my girlfriend was looking for her brother's grave, and I said, "Well, I'm going to walk over to my grandparents," but I was like 100 yards away. But I was walking, and all of a sudden, this energy just zapped right through me, and it almost knocked me down, and I started crying. And I told her about it, and of course, you know, she just kind of wrote it off. But I'm just wondering, in just a regular cemetery, have y'all ever had a problem with that? Y'all ever researched that? Thank you.
You mean just kind of catching that sense of sadness or emotion from a cemetery? Is that what you're asking?
It was anger.
Anger. Okay. I personally have never felt any kind of anger burst at a cemetery. I've felt despondence. I've felt loneliness and that kind of thing. And I'm not sensitive in any way, shape, or form. But I don't know about you, Richard. Have you ever picked that up while investigating your cemeteries at all?
I haven't, but I have to tell you, I don't generally investigate cemeteries anyway. I've never understood why they would be haunted. I know there are accounts from people that say they are, but certainly if I come back, a cemetery is the last thing I'd be interested in, the last place I would want to go. So I tend to think of them as some of the lesser known haunted locations, and I tend to avoid them for that reason.
No, I agree completely. And a couple of people are writing into me, and I guess one of the most cited places for Lincoln's ghost is still the White House, but I've never heard any affiliation with Lincoln at any of the battlefield sites.
No, nor I.
Yeah. Of course, you know, as Patricia just writes to us, a show was done saying that President Lincoln was truly the last casualty of war from the Civil War. And that's a great point as well. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. We're almost out of time here, Richard. I want to thank you for joining us. What do you really hope people take away from your book?
Always a pleasure, Dave. Well, what I hope people take away from it is, number one, visit the ground yourself and walk the ground yourself. I would encourage every American and pretty much everybody that comes to this country, make a pilgrimage to Gettysburg. Go understand why things happen there. It really has shaped America as we see it today. But go look at the personalities, look at the monuments and the men and women that are immortalized there. Learn about their stories. They are still trying to talk to us down through the ages. And I don't necessarily mean in a paranormal way either.
All right, Richard Estep, you can check out all the books and everything that he's got on there. RichardEstep.net is the website to visit. I want to thank back to our home audience and studio, Nathan and Donna, for making the show run so smoothly. My engineer and producer, Tim Dennis. Chris Boros for lining up these great guests, and of course Lisa Lyon and the one and only George Norrie for allowing me to sit in for him. Thank you to our guests Brandon Masullo and Richard Estep. And remember, you can check me out 5 days a week on the best in paranormal talk radio with Beyond the Darkness. Just check it out at darknessradio.com. It's a great companion piece to the best in overnight talk radio. I'll be back with you here next month on Coast to Coast AM.